to Defiant Hustle Radio tonight. This is Noreen Ehrlich, and Happy New Year. I haven't spoken with you in a while, but I hope you're having a really happy New Year. I want to put out a message of, I do coaching, so you're going to get this from me. Despite everything that's starting to go a little crazy in our world, I want to encourage everybody to really stand in their sense of presence and peace during this time when things seem to be getting crazy on a global level. So I really call upon our community to step out each day and commit to themselves that they'll hold themselves at a level of peace and anything but separation from the other people in our community. This is what I believe we need right now. And with that being said, I have got a wonderful guest in the studio, fortunately for me, tonight. And she is an influencer in our community. And she is stepping up to another level of leadership in the Greenwich community. So I would like everybody to listen closely tonight as we have an important interview with Cheryl Trepp Moss, who is running to fill Fred Camillo's seat as the state representative in the 151st district. So welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Thank you, Noreen, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
It's so nice of you to have me today.
It's wonderful. I'm really feeling very, very fortunate, very blessed to have such great guests on my show, and especially people who are ready to really step into a leadership role at this critical point, in my opinion, critical point in time when I feel like we have really strong decisions to make about where our values stand in our communities. So why don't we start with, I know your family's been long-standing members in the Greenwich community. Why don't you talk a little bit about how your family came to Greenwich and what roles you have in this community?
That'd be great. My grandfather, he owned Trepp's Flowers on Greenwich Avenue down by opposite where Restoration Hardware is now. It used to be the post office, so probably two doors down from Starbucks. Uh-huh. And so he had the flower shop there. It was actually funny. I had just got an article sent to me from my cousin showing about how he used to send cigarettes to in the services during the World War I. They would send cigarettes to people that were the soldiers overseas. Uh-huh. And if you didn't smoke, you could use them as currency. And apparently, he would get thank you notes for years from all these servicemen because they were so appreciative of that charity he ran.
That's nice.
But I know cigarettes, we don't really want to do that now. But everybody
wasn't so politically correct.
Yes. So he had the flower shop. My father he was a dentist in town, and Mick is Mickey Trepp, and he was also very engaged in town, played lots of sports here. Any of our older listeners would remember that he was very involved in the community. And my mother is still active. She is a volunteer at the hospital gift shop, and she's worked over 40,000 hours there buying toys for the gift shop.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
so
good.
So
good.
Now my brother took over my father's practice, and he also practices in town.
As a dentist.
As a dentist, mm-hmm. Yes.
And you're from the Millbrook section of town?
That's correct,
okay.
Yes.
All right, good. I know that right now you're going to have to correct me, but I sort of know it. But you're working on the RTM. You were...
Yes.
You're the chair of the public works.
No. So 2 years ago when I got on to the RTM when I was elected, I joined Public Works Committee. Mm-hmm. And I've been serving on that committee for 2 years. And then just recently when we all had to run again, because you have to run every 2 years,
okay.
I was reelected. And at that time, I ran for chair of our district, and I was unanimously elected to that position. And so going forward, I decided not to take on the Public Works Committee role for the next couple of years because I want to be able to commit fully to being the district chair and make sure I'm conserving my community in that role to the best of my ability. So that's where it stands right now.
Okay. So good. Good. What made you? So you had been. You worked in. I know various roles that. Well, I know you have a degree in economics, with
yes.
a minor in biology. Mm-hmm. That took you into different roles
you
where
that.
You worked with a lot of environmental issues in roles. For what I got the impression were. I don't know what kind of companies these were, because mm-hmm. I thought they were financial companies, but you were working on sludge. I know I have to do the sludge management or something
yes,
like
it's
that.
Very but glamorous.
Yeah, right.
Well, I started out in banking out of college. So I was an economics major, and I thought, it was the 80s. Think, Wall Street. I'm going to go work on Wall Street. And I started working out in trust and estate. And so I learned a lot about reading legal contracts, and I changed into their private banking, and I realized that that wasn't fulfilling to me. So I started investigating other careers, and I decided to use my biology background to get into environmental work, and I got a job with a company called Stone & Webster. There is an engineering firm, and I was in their environmental consulting department, and that's when we were working on the New York City sludge management project. And that, like I said, a very glamorous project was, but very important project.
Yes, very.
They used to dump sewage into the ocean off of Long Island, and there, people used to syringes would wash up on the shore.
I remember this.
Do you remember that?
I grew up on Long Island,
yeah.
on the south shore of Long Island, by the beaches out by Robert Moses.
Yes, exactly.
But I remember more of hearing stories or seeing stories on the news about people at Orchard Beach or City Island or something like that. And I remember thinking, being mortified that that's what could be happening, but it was happening.
I had a friend was on the front page of the New York Times holding up a syringe. He was a lifeguard at the beach. I think, I'm not sure if it was Robert Moses or not, but he was holding up a syringe that he found. And that was when they were really pushing to stop ocean dumping of sewage. I mean, all the states were doing it, all the coastline states. So that was a huge project to make sure that, they're taking care of their waste on land and not dumping it anymore. They used to call it the stain. It was not a nice thing.
We have other environmental issues to deal with now, which
yes.
we'll get to.
But the quality of water has improved so dramatically. I mean, I remember growing up on the Sound here, and it just, you would see things. You see a lot of stuff floating in the water, and now it's just so much cleaner. Because of largely because of that, and all the work of organizations like Riverkeeper that have stopped the pollution of businesses and industries upstream on all the rivers to keep them from dumping into the rivers, because that was all running out into the ocean, into the Long Island Sound. So now things are much cleaner.
Okay, so you have raised three boys.
Yes.
You went overseas to London with your family, and then you came back to Greenwich. You raised three boys. They all graduated from the high school here. And then you get involved in the community again. And what is compelling you now to run for state representative? What is it that's maybe not happening that's making you really want to take a step forward?
I think we're talking about environmental work. I feel that that's something that's going to be like our future in this state. I mean, we have to be focusing on the environment if we want to move forward as a community and benefit everybody here. I don't think that's something that's been a priority in our state, and I think it can benefit us. Like, you mentioned I was in London. I was running a recycling for the London Borough of Enfield. It was a quarter of a million residents. I ran the recycling program, and we ran it like a business. And you can make environmental businesses work. And as many are, know that now with you know the solar industry for instance, but that's what I think we need to be doing in the state is we need to be focusing on green industries and bringing them into our state and making us more of a place that they want to come, and I didn't see that happening. And I haven't heard any other people that were running or were interested in running for this position that might want to do that. So I wanted to be the voice for that environmental movement.
You would say that's one of your primary initiatives.
Yes.
So let's stick with that for a second. And I want to come full circle. You're running against Harry Arora. Mm-hmm. He's running on the Republican ticket.
Yes.
I believe once I get confirmation, he'll be on the show next week. And both of you are talking about improving the economy in Connecticut, in part because Connecticut is lagging in the economy. I don't guess that's the truth. Connecticut's economy is lagging compared to other states in the nation, in addition to the fact that people are leaving the state at such a fast rate. What do you think we can do with the environment? What needs to happen with that would improve the economy?
Right. So we need to bring jobs here and to keep people here. Let me just step back for 1 second. The loss of like jobs in this state or the loss of companies in this state. It wasn't because of, people complain about, they left because of taxes. And the real reason they left is because they wanted to go to places like Boston or New York because they want to be close to universities that have the talent pool. And they know that to get that talent, they need to be close to it and stay in the city where those recent graduates want to stay and live. So we're not going to be able to compete with that. To compete and get businesses here, we need to find the type of person that wants to live in a place like Connecticut. And that's going to be a person who's likes the outdoors, likes to go to the beach, likes to go hiking in the woods, but likes to have a nice urban nice downtown vibrant district.
Yes.
To go to. So they want to have the flexibility. And that's what Connecticut has to offer. But to bring those kind of companies here, we also need to be environmentally sound. So they all like to have, a very low carbon footprint. And to do that, so we need to have, a green economy. We need to be focusing on getting solar and wind power here. And when I say that, I don't mean like, putting solar panels out in fields and using up our green spaces. We need to use our hardscapes. So buildings, public buildings, should have solar panels on them. They can have small wind turbines on them. They do this in Europe. There's no reason we can't do that here. We can just, replicate it. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's something that other states, other countries are doing. Just do it here. And we can draw these companies in here that want to be able to say, oh, we're in a community that is using all renewable energy.
I agree.
It's a great promotional thing. These companies want that. And they have the type of employee that would be happy here. And that's what we need. We need to bring those kind of companies.
I like what you said, and I agree with you. Connecticut is, and I've lived around the world. I grew up on Long Island, as I said. And I've lived around the world. I've lived in Atlanta. I've lived in California. And I came back to the Northeast because this is where I'm from. And I appreciate it more than ever. I love sailing. I think that it's beautiful here. It is. I love the traditional downtowns. Mm-hmm. I do like the fact that you can go towards the water in one moment. You can go towards the mountains in another moment. There's a real sense of at the holidays. It's beautiful. There's a lot of accomplished, educated people here. There's access to the cities and access to the coastlines. And I really do think that those are aspects of what we need to sell people on to get them to stay here and come here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I also like the idea of green energy, because at the end of the day, not the idea of green energy, inevitably we have to go forward in our thinking. We can't keep running our leadership on the old paradigm of economy as the only bottom line. It has to be more of a humanitarian bottom line. What do you think of that?
Sorry. I totally agree.
Good. So let's go to, speaking of running on old paradigms, I don't know as much about it, but I did read this week, it's the hot topic, that there was supposed to be a debate with you and Harry Arora, the Republican candidate, but it got canceled at the last minute?
It never got off the ground.
It never got off the ground.
The league was trying to set up, the RTC nominated Harry, they reached out to both of us and said that they would like to set up a debate. And I, of course, said yes immediately. I didn't ask any questions, just yes, we will participate. And weeks went by, and there was no response from the league about whether or not they'd heard from Harry and his team.
It's the League of Women Voters.
League of Women Voters, yes, was waiting to. And they were trying been, because they were they kept sending emails saying, you know, it takes time to set these things up. You know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not something you can just like whip together in overnight. So they gave him a couple of deadlines, which he did not meet. And I guess they were going back, having a back and forth about the moderator and questioning the credentials and whether or not they could be part of could be nonpartisan.
Because they were questioning the moderator. What was her name? Kay?
Yes.
Sorry, folks. Yeah. I had to do a lot of homework beforehand, so I may stumble over some of this. But that she's on the
Kay Maxwell.
Kay Maxwell. She's on the Democratic ticket, so they were.
No. She's a registered Democrat.
Oh, she's registered. Sorry.
But if you know what they were requesting, first they wanted somebody who was unaffiliated. Uh-huh. And then they and the League of Women Voters. I guess they, as I understand it, were saying you can't dictate who our moderator is. And they said, well, then you have to announce that she's a Democrat, and that would be undermining her nonpartisan status, because that's she's experienced at doing these debates and being nonpartisan. Why would you suddenly have to start announcing your political party? You don't do that, you know, for any other job in your life. Why would you do that for a debate? You know, when you see debates on television, they don't stand up and say, I'm, you know, a Republican or I'm a Democrat. They mm-hmm. just run the debate.
Is there a lot of divisiveness in this town? Do you think there's a lot of divisiveness in this town, in the government?
I hear stories, but like generally, like my own experience at District 8 has been we all get along very well. Uh-huh. Everybody's very cordial, and I like it that way. You know, it's you know, I always try to get along with everybody and work with everybody and listen and hear people's perspectives, because that's what makes life interesting, is people have different perspectives and you have to learn to come together and make things work. And at the end of the day, getting the job done is the ultimate goal. And if you're going to fight about like the tiny details behind the goal of getting your job done, then nothing gets done. And that is, you know, we see that at a national level where nothing's getting done. And sometimes at the state level too.
I did, as I was doing research, understand that a lot of people are saying that you are, as you said, a good listener.
Yes.
And I was down at the DMV in Stamford today, and I was telling them my couldn't wait forever because I had to go do a show. And I was telling them about the show, and they got excited. But they were saying they don't. They were saying they were going to listen tonight to the show. And
hi.
That, hi, Sharon. But they were saying, well, they don't feel like they're being listened to. Do you think people?
Well, I mean, I do listen. I've been walking door to door and listening to people and asking them, you know, what they want to talk about. As long as they'll hold their door open in this cold weather. that's the key to finding out what's important to people is being able to listen to them. You know, do we always agree? Not necessarily, but it's important to know where people are coming from and value their opinions because, most people are thinking they're right and, you know, like I said, right or wrong, you want to be able to represent everybody in the community. And to do that, you have to be aware of their opinions. Mm-hmm. And obviously you may try to make the best decision you can, but you have to be able to listen and answer to them at the end of the day. And you do that by understanding their viewpoints.
And even communicating, right, in any relationship.
Right.
So so people are empowering you to make decisions.
Correct.
And you can't always agree with everybody. So much of it that we're realizing is required now is simply about transparency and communicating. This is what's happening.
Yes.
And this is why I think people, and I work with people more on a personal level or on a business level, but I think that they don't know how to communicate, and so they have their ideas about how they want something to happen, but they may express them, but they feel like it just goes into a black box, and they don't really
right.
know why their idea wasn't agreed with. So a lot of it is just saying, I think, what do you think? How do you think if you were when you get into this position that you will be able to tell people how you're making decisions along the way? How would you communicate with the public?
I think a lot of the communication these days is going through social media, and making sure that people are aware of my positions as well as when a decision is made, why I made it.
Mm-hmm.
and be able to answer to them, and be open to any positive and negative feedback, and that's something that I'm well aware of. You got to be open to not only the people's opinions before you make a decision, but you also have to be able to answer to them once you've made it.
Mm-hmm.
and be willing to hear their complaints and take that into account the next time you're going forward and making a decision.
I want to get into some of the other platforms mm-hmm. that you're running on. So why don't we talked about the green
mm-hmm.
economy.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have a specific one you want to start with, or you want me to get into some of that?
Can I just like step back 1 second about
you can,
the league? I just wanted to like just say one other thing about that is that I just felt that, the thing that was really important to make the most important point of that whole situation that happened is not like the back and forth, but the fact that the league is they're consummate professionals at what they do. They're a 100-year-old national organization. This is their 100-year anniversary, and everybody respects them in this town. And I just felt that I wanted to say that I hope going forward that nothing like this ever happens again, and that we can all agree that they are the experts at running debates, and that everybody should always use the League of Women Voters for their debates. You can do other interviews and other debates and other formats, but like they should be they're the gold standard when it comes to
mm-hmm.
debating.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make that clear that I wanted to say that going forward, nobody should use this as breaking the norm. The norm should continue.
It's just it's inevitable, but we're in such a divisive time now that politics, even I, when I got, somebody said to me this week that, you're only having Democrats on your show. And the truth was, I had Alex Bergstein on my show. And I was very, Alex is great. She showed up in the middle of a blizzard. I mean, I'm just thankful people will come on the show. And then I had Fred Camillo on the show. And yeah. Fred is, he came on the show in the summertime. He was wonderful. He was fantastic. And you meet Jill Oberlander, who's running against him, and she's fantastic. It's right. Really, I'm a bit of an idealist, but I'll stay that way. It's really sad that you could have so many people who have the best of the communities.
Yes.
Interest in mind, and yet we're divided into separate pools. When right. It comes down to it, the issues make it bigger than us being divided.
Well, that's when you're growing up here, you didn't know what party anybody belonged to. We all just wanted to, do what's best for the town,
right.
and represent the town as best we could. And that's one of the things I'd like to get back to, is just I'm here for the town.
And it's an amazing town, because when I was coming back from California, I could pick any place in the Northeast. And I said, I always admired Greenwich. I lived in Stamford for a little while. But it's an amazing town, and it's leading in so many ways. It would be wonderful to see it lead the country in a more humanitarian way. So that's my request for the politics.
Great.
So we're going to go to break.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Folks. This is Noreen Ehrlich. I'm in the studio tonight with Cheryl Trepp Moss, who's running for the state rep position for the 151st district that's been left open. And there is a vote on January 21st, a special
Correct.
Election on January 21st. We'll be right back.
Traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike from Greenwich up to Norwalk, it's a 28-minute ride, and the northbound Merritt Parkway from the state line in Greenwich up to Route 7 in Norwalk, 27-minute trip. The T.J. Martell Foundation, Music's Promise for a Cure. To learn more, visit tjmartell.org. That's tjmartell.org. I'm Jay Trelase in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
A wind advisory in effect until midnight tonight. Mostly clear, windy, colder tonight, 16 to 22. Wind chill single numbers, mostly sunny tomorrow with a high 30 to 35. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, 25. Rain showers milder Friday, 45. And for Saturday, some rain showers, 55 to 60. More showers Sunday, temperatures near 55 degrees. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackman on 1490 WGCH.
What if I told you I could change your life in just 100 days? This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defy and Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over two decades, I worked as a CFO and leader in Wall Street's fast-paced private equity industry. I helped guide teams of professionals to improve their careers, grow their businesses, and still maintain work-life balance. Based on this know-how and my unique understanding of life's principles, I created a 100-day plan that will unquestionably up-level your life. Make 2019 your year. You can and deserve to have it all. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at NoreenEhrlich.com or calling me at 475-333-2173. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Defy and Hustle Radio. This is Noreen Ehrlich, and I am very honored to have in the studio with me tonight Cheryl Trepp Moss, a Greenwich native who is running for the open position that was left by Fred Camillo, who's now the first selectman, and he was the 151st state rep. So there's a special election on January 21st,
yes,
and people can vote in the regular. Where do people vote for a special election?
Wherever they normally vote, that's where they'll vote on the 21st.
Okay, the 21st.
Yes.
All right.
And if they're not able to vote on the 21st, they can vote. They can go to the town hall and actually do their absentee ballot in person during the regular hours of the town hall, which is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And also on the Saturday before the election, which is the 18th, they can vote from 8 a.m. to 12 noon.
So they can vote on a Saturday.
Yes.
All right.
But that's if you're not going to be there on the 21st, then you can go in and do your absentee ballot in person.
Okay, okay. And you're running against Harry Arora.
Correct.
And hopefully he's about to confirm that he'll be on this show next week. But why don't we start to get into the issues, Cheryl? So I do think that you and Harry, of course, are running on similar issues, and I think that you have a lot of the same ideas based on the research I did. Of course, everybody wants to improve schools, improve the economy, gun control, protect voter rights. But why don't we – you want to start with – we talked about the green economy – why don't we start with education? I'm going for education right now. So okay. What is not happening in education in this district that you would address?
Well, I think the biggest issue for Greenwich is to make sure that we are getting our fair share out of Hartford. So making sure that, you know, commensurate with the amount of, you know, taxes that we pay to Hartford, that we're still getting our fair share here in Greenwich from back from the state to fund our schools. Because we want to make sure that they are fully funded. And that's something that, you know, we have to keep an eye on. Because, you know, Hartford does tend to treat us like their own personal piggy bank.
And do they?
Yeah, they tend to think that, oh, we can just keep raising taxes on Greenwich, and that's how we'll fund things that go, you know, Fairfield, I should say, Fairfield in general.
Fairfield County.
Fairfield County.
So because this is a very successful area,
right.
So we're putting money into the state, and the state's using the funds
right.
to fund other areas of the state?
Yeah, well, the general fund, and then it goes back to the different communities.
Okay, so
I think that's what I think is the biggest. I mean, that's the biggest impact from a perspective of going to Hartford. I mean, one of the other things that I would like to see happen in our schools is from a health and safety point of view. More education about opioid use and vaping, making it mandatory part of like the health education classes. I think that's going to be, you know, it's a something that people don't like to talk about, the opioid epidemic. But I mean, more recently, it's been in the news. Obviously, vaping, and I think those are two issues that have to be brought into the schools. And education needs to be brought into the schools to make not only the kids aware of the dangers, but also getting a message back to the parents too. I mean, it's very difficult to keep an eye on your kids now. You know, if your kids were smoking. Before, you'd know. Now they could be vaping in their room, and you have absolutely no idea because there's no smell.
Oh, so at the end of the day, it's really about making – it is coming down to transparency and making sure the parents really know what's going on.
Yeah.
What about I'm thinking about going to Hartford, which I don't know that much about, but then inevitably you're going to come up against – with many of the issues you might go in there to address,
right.
You're going to come up against obstacles, and maybe big obstacles like corporate
right.
obstacles or bureaucratic obstacles. How do you think you'll deal with that?
Well, you know, I I think you might have read this, but I grew up in a large family. I'm the youngest of six kids. And so I learned from a very young age how to, like, get my way. but doing that by working with everybody and making everybody come together. Mm-hmm. I think getting everybody to work and work toward a specific consensus, reach a consensus to get to a specific goal. Everybody feels like they're part of the process then. And at the end of the day, when you've finally achieved your goal, everybody feels great about it. And, you know, nobody feels left out of the decision-making process. And that's something I've learned over the years, not just with, like I said, my family, but in all of my volunteer work in the community. You know, you have to be able to work with others, and you have to be able to be creative in your problem solving. Mm-hmm. And you know, for instance, we have at Greenwich High School. When I was helping out with managing the water polo and swim teams, mm-hmm. the water polo team particularly, they have an issue because they have a lot of travel. There aren't a lot of teams locally. And so there's a lot of travel involved going down to, like, Annapolis or sometimes up to Massachusetts and Pennsylvania. So the costs of that program are very high, and they've had to be funded by the team itself. So we need to find funding outside of, you know, to try to help mitigate those costs to the players mm-hmm. and their families. So I started working with local businesses in town, and one in particular, we set up, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the business name or not.
Whether you're going to say something.
No, no, something nice. I'll give them a shout
out. You can say it.
Joey B's. They started
it's
a great place. They started a fundraising program I started this with them. Uh-huh. The kids go in and you invite lots of people. Spread the word, and the kids work the counter. And they get to keep all the tips from the night, and I believe it was 10% of the take of the food that's ordered that night, and it was great because it brought him new business. It got people aware of Joey B's, and it also raised a lot of money for the team, and it was this great opportunity. And now, I mean, not just sports teams do this, but, like, you know, GEMS does it. You know, all sorts of charities in town have a night at Joey B's where they can raise money. And it was something I started with the owner there.
It's interesting that you're talking about this because there are women emerging into more and more leadership roles. You see it in politics. What do you think, whether it's women or it's just the feminine principles, what is it you think that people are looking for in our leadership now that wasn't there before that you bring to the table? Because I hear you talking at least here about mm-hmm. collaboration. I think that's
yes.
one of them. What else?
Like I said, collaboration and being a consensus builder. You know, back to my listening skills. If you can listen to people, you can hear what it is that they want and mm-hmm. what their needs are, and if you can figure out a way to at least, you know, have it so everybody feels like they're getting something out of the situation at the end of the day, mm-hmm. and that they're not, you know, if people leave the table feeling like they're empty-handed, mm-hmm. they're not going to feel like they were a part of the process. Mm-hmm. But if everybody comes together and contributes something, the product at the end of the day is better, mm-hmm. and it is leaves everybody feeling like, you know, that they are part of it and that they are you know, part of the solution,
contributing,
and then they are happier with the final product, and it helps the process. You know, every single time that happens, it becomes easier. And you have to break down those barriers that have been created over the years, and and make people feel like they're valued.
Valued. That was the word. Good.
I got that.
It really is so that, because I think a lot of people feel like maybe one side is money. The people in power are determined to stay in power at the cost of, for example, not to say this, project this onto the women at the DMV, but they were saying to me that they don't think they're being seen and heard. So it is interesting times that people are feeling isolated. I understand people are feeling more isolated than ever, despite...
Yeah. You have to feel like you're appreciated. I mean, like, when I go to the, I mean, I'm sure you're the same way. You go to the DMV, and that's tough. They're standing there all day long, and it's not like necessarily always the most exciting job in the world. And people sometimes people aren't nice to them. And I just think give the person a smile and thank them for what they're doing to help you, and then they feel appreciated. It's a simple thing to do with people. You just talk about their kids or whatever it is that's interesting them. It's
being seen.
Yeah.
Being seen
it,
and being
see
valued
them.
They're
people. Every everybody's important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's go on. We have some more time. I wanted to get into some of the other the other stances. So you're talking about, we talked about green economy. We talked about schools. Why don't we talk about, you started to talk about gun control, opioids. Oh, let's get into gender equality. You talked, I saw you were talking about gender equality, equal pay for women. Why don't you talk to the listeners a little bit about that?
Where to start?
You look frustrated.
No. It's just, obviously, I support all the, everything you're just saying. Gender equality, a woman's right to choose, equal pay, all of everything that is on that agenda is something that is very important to me, because I think there have been a lot of strides in the last year in the legislature. They've putting in the increase in the minimum wage. What other things? There have been a lot of improvements.
Right.
There are still improvements to be made, especially with the equal pay for women, and as well as making sure that particularly kids in high school feel heard and they feel safe, because of if they're LGBTQ.
Right.
They need to feel that they're in a safe place, mm-hmm. and that they're welcome. They're part of this community too, and they're valued, and they're important. Everybody's important.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So, look, when I asked you the question, you look so frustrated, but it's amazing. But the good thing is I do see it changing, as long as we don't go backwards again. But it does seem like we're becoming more accepting of each other. We're just going through, I'm oversimplifying it, folks, but like a wobble as we figure out what our new values are going to be. But in the meantime, I do think that we really have to, in order to balance it out, make real strides.
Yeah. It's very reassuring when you talk to young people and how what a non-issue things are, the cultural norms are changing for the better. It just things take time.
They take time. They do take time, but things are happening quickly, and I do see great changes that will happen for us in 2020, but it's a
new decade.
A tricky year.
It's a new decade.
I was reading something that said that the Democrats, they want to put their initiatives through using the old bureaucratic way of just taxing, generating more taxes in order to drive through initiatives using the old bureaucracy. So I'm not exactly sure what that means. I understand the idea of raising new money by pushing new taxes through, but what do you think of that?
We need to be we need to be bringing in new jobs. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be increasing taxes. Mm-hmm. Got to be the focus in the economy is bringing in new jobs, mm-hmm. because new taxes are the things that's driving people away from our state, mm-hmm. and in order to bring in those jobs, like I said before, we have to make it a more attractive state. I'll talk about something that is not necessarily a popular thing, but part of making this state more attractive is fixing our infrastructure. And, we have, bridges that are over 100 years old. We have traffic. We have our roads are a mess. And we need to be able to, fund this infrastructure. And other states all around us, they all fund their bridges and they fund everything by user fees, mm-hmm. tolls. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's how they do it. And we need to be looking at doing that here in Connecticut too, because it's a way of making sure that everybody pays their fair share. Mm-hmm. We can either pay. Well, there's a couple of options on the table for paying for our infrastructure. One is to raid our rainy day fund. And I don't know if you know about that. We have a rainy day fund now, which mm-hmm. Years ago, when Jody Rell left the state, the governor.
Yeah.
She left with we had zero in our rainy day fund, and this year they just announced that we have now 14% of our state budget is in a rainy day fund, and that way, if there's something happens, like if there's a recession, or we just have bringing in less than our income tax than normal. Uh-huh. We've got money to fall back on.
Right.
So that things like education. So that's a cushion. Because, otherwise how do we pay for things like education?
Right.
So that's not an option to raid that fund. The other option that has been thrown out there is to borrow more money. Mm-hmm. We've been on a debt diet under Lamont, and we don't want to we're running out of time.
No.
So we've been on this debt diet. We don't want to start borrowing more money again. We can't do that.
Right.
So the way to raise more money for this is through tolls. And we have to come together and just say, okay, how do we want to do this? So the options I just laid out to you, three different options. Two of them involve where we have to pay 100% ourselves from Connecticut. The third option, we don't have to pay the whole amount. There'll be cars and trucks, 40 to 50% of the cars and trucks on our road are from out of state. It's like getting a discount. Do you like when you go shopping and do you like to see something on sale?
Uh-huh.
I do. I don't want to have to pay 100% of the cost of our infrastructure improvements. And that's why I'm supporting tolls mm-hmm. for cars and trucks mm-hmm. so that we can raise the money to get our infrastructure fixed
mm-hmm.
because that is one of the big reasons why businesses don't want to be here is because our trains are slow and we have traffic. The other advantage of having tolls is that you can do congestion pricing. You said you were in California.
I was in California. Yeah, I was in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
so it was nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
Even New Jersey. I was in New Jersey.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Connecticut not seem too bad.
But you can use congestion pricing to reduce it. It's been successful in California. They still have their problems, but it's improved. There are other things you can do, like to decrease traffic. It could create an HOV lane, and it could go like you don't need a several HOVs. You can just have one that changes direction with depending on the time of day.
Yeah.
And you could have a discount for people in the HOV lane.
Mm-hmm.
And that would encourage fewer cars on the road. And you would have, less congestion. If we fix our trains, fewer cars on the road. there are lots of benefits from doing this, and it's something we have to consider if we really want to bring businesses to this back to our state.
I want to ask you this. It's the first day. You win, right? It's the first day.
Yeah.
What are you going to start focusing your attention on immediately?
It will be the economy, 100%. Trying to get the, like I said, trying to focus on bringing businesses in here, reducing regulations for small businesses, helping them with their taxes. The other thing I want to just mention is that in a part of, you know, raising, bringing in businesses here, and having to implement something like tolls, I think we should help our own residents by also reducing like the sales tax, mm-hmm. because that would bring it alleviate the cost to, you know, the people that can least afford tolls are the same people that can least afford the sales tax, mm-hmm. and that would help weigh it out, you know, help balance it out for them. And that way we could make it more palatable to everybody. Mm-hmm. Again, consensus. People want reduced taxes. Well, that's something we could easily do to help people out.
We have 2 minutes.
Okay.
I'm curious, who inspires you? Who inspires you as a leader?
Well, I'd say, you know, I've been, Jim Himes is somebody that really, I've been, you know, following him since he first got involved in politics, and he's really a phenomenal leader. Also, Alex Bergstein, I think she's been doing a phenomenal job, and she's incredibly smart, and I wish I could have half the knowledge she has in her little finger. I hate to...
No. Coach over here says you do. You just have to... You'll be bringing it forward. And what is it about Jim Himes you like?
He, again, very smart, and he cares about his community. When I win, he is going to be he's in my district, so he's going to be my constituent, as well as the fact that I'm his constituent. And he's a great listener. He's helped people I know. There was a woman I knew, she was stuck in Guatemala. She couldn't get back here, and he helped her get back here, even though all of her whole family, she had legal work visa, and her kids were all U.S. citizens.
So good man,
yeah,
good-hearted man.
He's a good, very good heart.
All right. Well, folks, thank you, Cheryl Trepp Moss, and good luck with the election. Folks, I enjoyed talking with you today. Happy New Year, and we'll be back next week when we have Harry Arora on to talk about his stance. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you next week.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
Led to launching the U.S.